Theory time. Kusakesh, now that he's done babysitting the Eerie, shows up in Aesir and creates a bunch of unique spren, and it fills what's-his-face's bingo board that he's been looking for forever. What's his name?
Axes.
Thank you. Axes the Collector is in Aesir, and it fills up his bingo board when Kusakesh shows up, and then Axes is finally able to fight now that his bingo board has shown up. Welcome back to Following Know It Honest on my podcast. This week is episode 255 with chapters 80 through 82 of Wind and Truth, entering day 7 proper, where apparently everyone dies. Paul, how are you?
I'm good. I'm alive still, which is promising. I'm excited to talk more. Actually, a little mixed emotions to talk more because we have some sad moments, some sad things to talk through in this episode, but doing good, ready to move forward through this epic book.
Elliot, how are you?
I'm doing well. I think the vibe I'm getting from these chapters is maybe sad, but more like intense. I feel like the interlude from last week really set the tone for day 7. And here we are in this, all right, no more joking around, no more spending your time looking for random things. No, this is business time. We are going to squish some people flat and we're going to have to face our demons. Here we go.
With gore going everywhere, as Michael Kramer describes it epically.
Yes,
Elliot, do you have a summary for us?
Yeah, I do. So, 3 chapters here. Chapter 80 starts with a real quick Adolin section where he's looking through some really cool Fabrial binoculars. I thought about maybe doing like a sketch up of these things, but they're kind of straightforward. It's just binoculars. It's two telescopes. No, what are those called? Looking glass, spyglass. There we go.
Spyglasses.
Two spyglasses tied together with a little bit of Fabrial action going on where it's like highlighting the enemies he's looking at. He sees the heavenly ones kind of scouting out the city. Ominous. End of that chapter, by the way, chapter 80 is where the Thunderclast arrives. So that's what Adolin is kind of picking up on there. Middle of chapter 80 is Navani. In Urethiru, in the spiritual realm, in a vision, in the past, the tower is like shutting down, and she finds herself in the middle of this showdown between one Windrunner and 100 Skybreakers as they're trying to hatch it out of, oh, what do we do? And you're lying to the people. No, you're lying to us, and it's your fault. It's your fault. You know, kind of pointing fingers every direction with a bondsmith in the middle trying to help everyone get along, maybe, I guess. Or maybe he's in on it. I don't know. Chapter 81 is Sigzil going at it, battling, fighting. Pretty epic battle scene, actually, here with Sigzil, if I remember correctly. And then jumps over to Adolin, who is trying to fight the Thunderclast that has busted into his city, and it's not going so well. Flashback over to Sigzil, who's now met up with Layton, and they go up against Moash. It does not end well. I'm sure we're going to talk about it quite a bit. Chapter 82 then goes back to Navani, who is still trying to figure out what's going on at Urethiru. She's able to connect to the sibling for a little bit and chats with the sibling on kind of what to do. And then they kind of have a little bit of a plan going forward. Dalinar and Navani talk about what they're going to do next. And then back to Adolin fighting the Thunderclast. That's where we get the smashing the Shardbearer flat. It's not Adolin who gets smashed. It's the other guy who's helping him out. But they are not successfully taking down a Thunderclast. And that wraps up 82.
Sounds good. Paul, do you have 2 words this week I will not forget?
Thank you, Trevor. I do have 2 words. And you did not forget this week, so I'm very proud of you. My 2 words, you might get mad because one of them is quite hyphenated. But my two words are ruthless. Moash, of course. Who else? And broken formation. As one word. Trevor's laughing.
That's not even close to one word.
No. That's absolutely one word. A singular broken formation is what we're talking about. So, yeah. Not too much detail, so I'll go ahead and just share that it's mostly referring to all of our battles going on right now. Sigzil trying to stretch himself to save people. Adolin's crew being in shambles with the fights going on versus Thunderclast. Just there's no longer order to the fights that are happening. It's now every man for himself scrambling. So quite the broken formation is one word.
Elliot?
He's just borrowing one of my words from last week. Last week I only used one of my two, so I was saving that to let Paul use this round, so it's fine.
Yeah. I'm banking up words, Trevor. It's fine.
But I do have two words this week, and the first one ties into the scene that we saw with the shard bearer getting smushed, and that the word I picked is flattened because of he gets flattened, but also I feel like that's what's kind of happening to a lot of our scenes across the board here. Sigzil and Leighton go up against Moash. It does not go well. They don't like get literally pancaked, but it's no contest. Moash is just dealing out destruction left and right. And this Thunderclass plus the armies of Fuse breaking in on Adolin. I feel like we're in for a flattening. My second word is actually lies. And I'm intrigued by this Windrunner guy. We get a name for him, Gareth. Gareth the Windrunner, who it doesn't seem like we have any reason to doubt his motives or who he is, other than we're getting hints from like the sibling and some other source as well. Somebody else weighs in on like, oh yeah, you can't trust that guy. He's not what he seems. And I'm just kind of like, well, what do you mean? Like, why? Why is this guy not to be trusted?
He's the Windrunner who lays down his sword first at the Recreants.
Right. Right.
So he's already under suspicion, right?
Well, okay. Let's talk about that for a second. Maybe. But I think we've been told, maybe this is wrong, maybe this is part of the lies, I don't know, we might be getting into this, that there was an honorable reason for the Recreants, that they realized that what they were doing was hurting others, right? Like the parchment and all that,
imprisoning Bida Mishram, damaging the spread. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, isn't that what was told to us or kind of fed to us? Was we imprisoned Mishram? It had all these terrible effects on the parchment. We're laying down our swords, so this is no longer a thing. And the Spren had a say in it.
Yes. I think all of that is true, as far as we know. I don't know if Dalinar and Navani know that. That was the Adolin storyline from the previous book.
Okay.
I'm not sure if they've been briefed on that. And so they're still on the hunt for why would we betray our Spren.
Okay. So maybe I'll reframe that as I don't have necessarily a reason to doubt this guy, but throughout these chapters, it's being suggested that we should doubt or investigate this guy. So I'm kind of intrigued by that.
Okay. All right. Let's keep talking about Navani, and then we'll go to either Adolin or Sigzil. Seems like a pretty good way to split it up. Navani shows up in Old Urethiru. The tower's not what it used to be, not what it should be. And there's that Gareth the Windrunner is having a stand down with Skybreakers. Are they in the auditorium, like the open forum, like entryway in front of, like, for everyone to see, having this knockdown drag out fight?
My head is saying that they were actually outside, but I don't know if I'm remembering that correctly.
Oh, like by the Oath Gates? Okay. But in a public area, at least, is what I'm trying to ask. So, obvious division in the Knights Radiant right before the Recreants. And Elliot, you have in the outline who's in the wrong, who's in the right. Do you want to lay down the rules here for us to recap?
Yeah, I'm, as I was just talking about, I'm kind of intrigued by this. So the scene we get that Dalinar and Navani walk up to see, and then Dalinar, kind of surprising Navani, pushes, like, switches who Navani's is in the body of. She's just in some random person walking around with Dalinar, and then they see, oh, there's one Windrunner, 100 Skybreakers, and Malishi the Bondsmith in the middle. And Dalinar's like, well, what if I could do, you know, zoop, and then Navani goes into Malishi and takes his role in the whole thing. I believe what's gone down here, the reason they're having a tiff, is that the Skybreakers learned of the origin of humankind, that big reveal that we got at the end of Oathbringer, that humans are not the natives here. We've come in, we've taken this over from the singers. This is actually their world. Skybreakers have then told that to the general populace against the will of both Malishi the Bondsmith and Gareth the Windrunner. So I think that's what the tiff is about, but it seems like there's more to it. The Skybreakers seem to be alluding to, like, oh, there's, you guys keep hiding stuff from us. What are you doing? We don't agree with your methods. We're out of here. And they leave. But it's not fully, like, spelled out what the Bondsmith and the Windrunners are up to. Also, in our day and age, like the modern time, the Skybreakers are very much on the bad side. I mean, all these scenes we're seeing with Sigzil, he's fighting Skybreakers. So you initially want to say, oh, well, I'm on the side of the Bondsmiths and the Windrunners. But should we be? Like, what do you guys think? Who do you think is in the wrong here?
So my brain goes back to Oathbringer. Renarin finds the hidden library in the library of all the gemstones. Do you guys remember this? They go down to the library. All the books are decomposed. A couple chapters later, Renarin's down there and said, and talking to his friend, and he finds the hidden latch in the wall. And then they find all the gemstones in the wall. And if you resonate them with noise, or if you resonate them with music, then they have a little script that you can write down. And that's the library of the Knights Radiant. Over the next part four of Oathbringer, maybe part three, we get epigraphs of those diaries from the Knights Radiant right before the Recreants. During that, those epigraphs, we get information about Malishi and imprisoning by Idom Mishram, and some of the Knights Radiants are on board with it. I believe, like, the Elfcallers are like on board with it, but then the Edge Dancers aren't. The Edge Dancers are, like, leaving the tower, trickling out. This is all from memory, but so if I'm wrong, I apologize. But that, all that to say, those little diary things that we found in Oathbringer is where my brain goes back to for these scenes, because right before the Recreants, some orders stayed, some orders left, and that meant different things for different orders. So for the Skybreakers, they never disbanded. They never dissolved like pretty much everybody else did, even before the Recreants happened. The Recreants was just the formality at the end of the fall of the Knights Radiant. But the Skybreakers left even before that. So they're still an adhesive group this whole time.
And that's so fascinating for me to think about. I haven't really thought of it in that way. Like, the Skybreakers have been the antagonistic or the different group with all of our Knights Radiant. And I just understood it to be either one of two things. We've talked about this before, but either it is the Skybreakers are just bad and like evil and we never knew it, and or you know, they're too far off the beaten path. There's something honorable, right, in following the law, but it's taken too far, or something along those lines. Or it's like, I don't know. I'd be curious to see more of what all the dynamics of the Knights Radiant groups were like back then, and if it looks the same as it does to now. I didn't know if it was like the Skybreakers had been misled. Like, Nail went off the deep end and essentially took the Order of Skybreakers with him. My impression, what I've held on to, is that Skybreakers today are not actually in line with what they should be in line with. That's been my number one thing. But it makes sense if they broke off a long time ago, before everyone else actually like handed in their spren, that I guess this could be different. I guess, yeah, the Skybreakers have puzzled me from the start. I've said this before as well. I know probably in a previous book, I anticipated this trope with an Order of Knights Radiant to be with the Dustbringers. They're the ones who I've always pictured as like the devious, the bad boys, if you will, of the Knights Radiant and
the rock band.
Yeah, exactly. The don't play by the rules type of thing. And I mean, I guess the Skybreakers do very much play by their rules, but their rules are a bit questionable. So, yeah, it's kind of crazy to me to have this like Skybreaker group that is fighting against the other orders of Radiance. Like, this is something I did not foresee ever since we started this. And is Zeth's spren and situation indicative of this as well? Is he going to break the cycle? I really want resolution for the Order of Skybreakers altogether. I really want some resolution here as to, like, I don't know, something's off.
That's a good tie-in. I didn't think about the where our Zeth story could go with this, because this scene here is starting to make me wonder if the Skybreakers are the ones in the right here in what's about to go down. And flipping that a little bit on its head, I'd kind of maybe guess that, yeah, Nail had come in and taken the Skybreakers away. This seems like it could be Skybreakers break away for all the right reasons, and then maybe later on, Nail takes control of that faction and kind of leads them astray through his faulty vision of what it means to be a Skybreaker. But could Zeth's storyline bring that circle back? Could Zeth's storyline wrap that back to, no, Nail, you've led them astray. Here are the events of the Recreants and how the Skybreakers played a good role in that. We need to return the Skybreakers to that. That's a storyline I did not see coming.
Take this as headcanon or predictions or whatever. This is kind of how I played out in my head. As the Recreants approaches, we bend the rules, like the Knight Radiant orders, Malishi, the Windrunners, everybody in charge bends the rules. We get to 10 years before the Recreants in this scene here. The Skybreakers draw a line in the sand and say, hey, this is not what we signed up for. We're out. And then over the next 10 years, you get the other Knights Radiants or the other orders falling away. So, you know, some knights leave, some orders leave, you know, all of that. And so by the time the Recreants actually shows up and we put our sword in the sand, and the Windrunner, Gareth, is the one turning his back on the Knights Radiant, that's really just the end formality of what's been coming for a long time. Now, going back to the Skybreaker thing here, that's what I understood from this scene is the Skybreakers may have left for all the right reasons of, hey, you guys are about to imprison Ba Idam Mishram, make slaves of the whole Singer race across Roshar forever. That's not what we signed up for. We're out. And then Nail shows up and says, hey, yo, we should go make our own order in Shinovar and, you know, go, you know, do our Skybreaker thing. And that's where they go off and Nail starts manipulating the Skybreakers. And that's where we get the present day Skybreakers, is all the mess that we have with Nail. That's where I'm at with the whole Knights Radiant of deterioration. Skybreakers are the first to leave, because obviously, and then everything else happens after that. You guys on the same page there?
I like that. I don't know if it's just because I'm talking to two Skybreakers that this is copium, or y'all are just trying to justify your order. Could very well be. I do agree, though. I have faith that the Skybreakers were not just like inherently the evil, the bad egg or something. You know, I think there's something going on, and I'm really hoping that we get some redemption or some recorrection for the Order. Because right now they're definitely not helping, I would say, right now.
Good analysis. Yes.
Yeah. That's my expert opinion on this. The Skybreakers are in fact not helping. So
in chapter 82, Navani and Dalinar have this quick conversation about this middle-aged lady and her two teenage kids walking past. And then they talk about manipulating connection. And I thought this scene was fascinating, actually, just as like a Cosmere theory standpoint. Dalinar and Navani are talking about manipulating connection. And Dalinar says, oh, I threw you to Malishi because you guys are both the sibling bondsmith and you guys have that in common. So it was easy to just draw a connection line. You're there. And then Navani turns to this random lady that's just walking past and says, okay, well, connect me to her. And Dalinar says, well, no, I can't do that. Like, that you have to have something in common. And Navani says, oh, no, we have plenty in common. She's about the same age as me. She has two, you know, older teenager, young 20s kids that she's looking after. I the exact same thing. And a connection line forms as she says that. And I was like, that's crazy to me. Like, the person on the receiving end doesn't even have to be aware of a connection line forming for a bondsmith to create a connection line and then manipulate it. That had huge implications for me of that. There was no need for a receiving end of a connection line. I thought that was fascinating. Did you guys pick up on that?
I did notice that. I didn't think about it as the bigger implications that maybe your thoughts went to, but no, I think you're right. That probably is a big moment. I think the question for me might be, is that a bondsmith thing? Or can anyone do that? Like, if you're aware enough, if you're perceiving your connection in a powerful enough way, can you do that? Or is that an ability that she has because she's a bondsmith and it can manipulate connection in that way? But you're right. I don't think we've seen that up till now.
Paul, do you have any strong thoughts on connection or as a bondsmith power? Like, are you looking forward to that? Or if it comes, are you just going to like take it as it comes? I've been waiting on pins and needles for connection manipulation. So I keyed into this a lot.
Okay. I've enjoyed it a lot. I'm very open to where it can go. It's one of those things that I feel like comically I try not to think about too much, because there's so many possibilities. It gets a little bit crazy quick. So I'm like, I'm going to hang out in the lashings make you move fast. Like,
yes.
thought area, and as Brandon teaches me stuff about connection, I will accept it with open arms. But it's quite the Pandora's box, I think, to open up. So, to answer your question, yes, I am excited about this. And it's really cool to see these things. I think these are things that I've already assumed were possible, I guess. It's just kind of like figuring it out, I suppose. So, yeah. Really exciting, really cool. I really like the chapters where we start stress testing our surges all throughout these books. It's always been really, really fun, whether it's Windrunner surges or Light Weaving or whatever. It's really, I absolutely love that. I really would like more of that for all of the surges. I know we've seen a lot of them, but definitely not all. Some were just getting like division and things like that. So yeah, I always like it. Connection specifically is still a bit baffling to me of like the impact it can have, how much impact it can have, or yeah, it's more of an abstract one. So it's harder for me to theorize and to run with the ball. And I think,
yeah, that's fair. I'm really curious to see how much connection will have a play towards the end of the book, or if that's more of a we'll explore more Bondsmith stuff later. Because if we like manipulate connection as like a serious plot point to defeat Odium, I might have an issue with it, and it might get a little too crazy for even me. But I don't know. I'm all on board so far of trying to manipulate connection as a magical power. I think that's really cool. All right. Adolin. Adolin is an Aesir and in deep trouble. There's a lot more Fuse showing up than was on his calendar. And a Thunderclass. What'd you guys get from Adolin's stuff?
Okay, before we get into all the Thunderclass stuff, there was actually one bit that happens before all that I wanted to get you guys' thoughts on. Maya and Adolin share some thoughts a couple times throughout the sequence. And Adolin's like, you know, I might have to summon you. I might need my shard blade to fight this thing. And Maya keeps repeating back, no, like, I'm coming. Help is coming. Hold out a little longer. Help is coming. And we've talked before about like what help could she actually be bringing. But I feel like we might be setting up for a ride of the Rohirrim. I mean, a ride of the Honor Spren. You know, something to some epic scene where Adolin is up against the wall, totally crushed, and here come some kind of Honor Spren army that I don't even know what in the world this would look like to save the day.
Maya's the moth that we send off to talk to Gwaihir.
Yes. Yep. Exactly.
There we go. I like this. This is fun. I'm wondering what their chant is going to be. Like, fourth Honor Spren? I don't know. We'll see.
Honor is dead, but I'm not.
Yeah, exactly. Not. Yeah, something like that. I've been wondering this. So when Adolin sent Maya off originally, it was to go get support of other Honor Spren, right? To try to get more Windrunners. Wasn't that the original plan?
Yeah. But yes and no. Short answer, yes, okay. And no.
Okay, at least to get help from Honor Spren, right? Maybe not necessarily them becoming, like, making more Windrunners, bonding more people, but at least getting help. Do you think that it's Honor Spren that are going to come back? Because my guess is it's not going to be. There's going to be something we don't expect. I don't know what, so that doesn't make for a great prediction. but I feel like it's not going to be the honor spren,
Mr. Kremling man.
Yeah, exactly. Like maybe I don't know. There's going to be some either an assortment of spren or something unexpected. Maybe that man from the lighthouse or something like that.
Rhiino.
There's lots of people and things in Shadesmar. So I kind of wonder what's going to come belting out of here. I'm pretty convinced it's not going to be just Honor Spren.
It's going to be thousands of fully kitted Elantrians coming to save the day.
There we go. Now that would that would do the trick right there. That would save the day.
Wait.
Uh-oh, Elliot's got an actual prediction.
And it's going to be something big.
Okay, it's not actually a prediction because I don't have the information. It's a realization that we might be missing a piece that we should have. Let me walk you through my thought process here. So there are definitely things in Shadesmar that I feel like, if harnessed, would be powerful. Like we saw Fear Spren or whatever it is as like these ravenous wolf-like creatures with fangs and things like that. That like, you know, if you could bring an army of those, like what could you do? But we
nightmare, if you will.
Ooh. Okay, and that's a whole nother train of thought. Back on the previous train of thought. But there's still this problem. The battle we're having, at least most of it, is happening in the physical realm. You can't get those fearsome spren or even corporeal honor spren in the physical realm. We've got Notum with us in the physical realm, and he can't really do much. He's a messenger. He's a scout because he can't fight. So even if you pull up with 100,000 honor spren, what does that get you? Now, here's my
cool moment, looking though. Blue cloud on the other side in Shadesmar. That's what it gets you.
A lot. It does. Get a you lot that. Of flashing lights.
There you go. Yeah.
Maybe you can do something. But then, okay, so here's the light bulb. Did anybody actually go read the story card story with Jasnah going into Shadesmar?
Guilty, I have not.
Okay.
I have not either, but
should I right now?
Well, so here's the thing.
Literally yesterday.
So if you don't know what we're talking about, at Dragonsteel, where Wind of Truth was released, Brandon pulled a surprise on everyone, and they patented this new cool idea of these story cards. It's like a trading cards, but it makes a story. So you had to go and trade these cards with other attendees at the con and get all the pieces together of the stories. There were three different stories. One of them was silly. No, two of them were silly. One of them was serious. The one serious story was about Jasnah. And based on the art that came with it, it looked like her going on this journey in Shadesmar, fighting off creatures and helping this guy. There's like this green skinned dude, but I never actually went and read it all. Do we need to go read that?
It might be a good read. Guy, it is canonical.
Yes, it is canonical.
Timing of it is pretty in the past, but it could potentially be a hint because I think there's a good bit of Shadesmar stuff allegedly.
Because I'm thinking about
Mary. That's what, his name.
That's the other character, the green dude.
Yeah, the green dude is his name is Tivneri. Tyvneri. Tivneri.
And I'm just wondering if there's. You're right. I think that story is set in the past from where we are now. But what if what they do in that story would tell us more about what Maya might be able to do for us?
Maybe.
I have another prediction, which we can go ahead and throw it in the it's definitely not going to happen pile. But I was just thinking through. Who is in Shadesmar? We simply just had an interlude where all the Irialli people pack it up and are headed through Shadesmar. Is it possible that they're gonna we get an army of Irialli on the scene? I agree with Trevor, who's shaking his head very intently. I think there's no chance. However, there is all the Irialli people in Shadesmar, I think, at this moment. I don't know if these moments line up perfectly, but I'm gonna say it's now. So, you know, keeping my options open. We don't know exactly what happens to them once they go through here exactly.
We
might have hints to where they end up, but
all right, you ready?
First time.
Mm-hmm. Theory time. Kusakesh, now that he's done babysitting the Eerie, shows up in Aesir and creates a bunch of unique spren, and it fills what's-his-face's bingo board that he's been looking for forever. What's his name?
Axes.
Thank you. Axes the Collector is in Aesir, and it fills up his bingo board when Kusakesh shows up, and then Axes is finally able to fight now that his bingo board has shown up. There you go.
There we go. Now that would be cool. And in all like real talk, though, do y'all think it's crazy for me to think that there's something other than Honor Spren coming, or is it just like no, it's gonna be Honor Spren? That's what she was sent out for.
I not crazy.
I feel like there's not a reasonable solution in my head with Honor Spren coming.
I agree.
But I also can't think of a convincing alternative at this moment. I'm sure someone will comment on this and be like, guys, you forgot about this that's in Shadesmar, and that would absolutely be a perfect fit. But right now I got nothing.
I mean, nothing serious comes to mind. I'll dispense with the garbage ideas and just entertain your question. Besides maybe the what about the Horn Eaters? What if they all jump through their perpendicularity and Maya found them?
I mean, I could see that. If you have that, then do you have Rock coming back?
Rock gets dialogue, please.
Rock gets dialogue and comes back. I mean, that's not a, I'd say that's not a bad prediction at all.
I
can't think of anyone else who would be here, who would be coming.
I wouldn't call it a good prediction by any means, but it's not horrible.
But dude, if Ride of the Honor Spren becomes Ride of the Horn Eaters, I am here for that.
That'd be pretty cool.
That would absolutely, I mean, other than you having Rock has dialogue on your bingo board, like that's pretty unforeseen,
yeah.
Thing there. So, yeah, I guess we'll have to read and find out. This is quite the mystery for me. It may just end up being like, oh yeah, she found Spren who are willing. But considering we haven't seen any like Maya point of view of like what's going on, it makes me think that there's going to be a surprise of who comes back. So.
All right, and then the Thunderclash shows up, and Adolin's in big trouble. And long story short, oh man, what's his name? The Commandant Commandant Kishkam? Kukushkam?
Kushkam? Kushkam.
He makes the call to drop the dome, or drop the oil in the dome at least. And Nezaham has an epic quote. Runs into battle and dies. I just want to read it real quick. He puts on his shard blade or shard plate, equips his shard blade, turns to Adolin and says, "For Prime and people, so long as the Emperor is on his throne, I fight." And then he charges the Thunderclast. That's epic. That is a great line. Like I have next to zero connection with the Azish people, but that line is awesome.
Yeah, definitely some cool Thunderclast fight scenes. Adolin is trying to wrap this aluminum chain around the legs of this thunderclast to try and stop it, and that does not go well. He ends up just getting jerked around and smashed into the ground multiple times. This thunderclast is not to be stopped easily, which we should expect, right? Because I think that only times we've stopped thunderclast in the past have been with lots of Knights Radiant.
Yeah.
We have with zero.
Zeth and Jasnah are like the only two to bring one down.
Yeah, like yeah. Nightblood, right?
Yeah.
Well, and Renarin has like an epic scene where he's facing down a thunderclast, right? I don't know if he actually brings it down, but he like stops in his tracks or something cool. But not to rag on Adolin. He's super capable and cool too, but we don't have any magic powers here other than Shardplate.
True.
One thing I want to point out also, so this aluminum chain, they mention, I don't remember if it's in these chapters or a previous one, I think it's in chapter 80 or so, they mention that there's like a lot of aluminum here. Isn't there like this whole area? There's like tons of stuff made out of aluminum, and I don't know if that's convenient for the plot or if it's like what's going on here, but it seems to be a lot of aluminum, and every time aluminum is mentioned, it seems to be not like primary importance, but like really helpful to know for our characters.
It's a little bit convenient, but there also is precursor for it. I'll help you out here. Back in Oathbringer, when we're walking through Shadesmar, after part three, they show up at a market outside of Kolinar, and there's this red painting that we went crazy about because we just read Warbreaker. Kaladin's like, oh, I can almost see something in that painting, but I can't. Moving on. And then he walks past a silver-like chain. Like there's a necklace or something he describes as like a silver-like chain, and it's on sale for like 50 million spheres or something like that. Aluminum is the currency of Shadesmar, the cognitive realm, because it's the anti-investiture stuff. So for the Azish to have a lot of it, that's not super unheard of, because we've gotten some mentions from Gox. Is that his name? Am I crazy? What's the Emperor's name? Why can't I not think of this?
Yonagon.
Thank you. Yonagon. We get mentions from Yonagon that a star fell 100 years ago, or it was like 25 years ago. And then, you know, we've kept this secret. It's one of Azir's big secrets is that they have a lot of aluminum. So yes, you're right, Paul.
I appreciate it. Glad to know I'm not crazy.
You're welcome.
I don't know if anything is going... I don't think anything is necessarily going to happen with that. But it was just quite an interesting point. Like, well, we haven't seen any other place that seems to just have like tons of aluminum lying around. So I don't know if that will end up being relevant in some regard, or if that's just like... Aha, here's a little nod for Cosmere readers if you want more mentions of cool metal. So, and that's it. You know, who knows?
Anything else on the Adolin front? He's got to get back up somehow. Either it's Maya or Jasnah or both. But I feel like he's doomed unless somebody shows up.
The only other thing I'll say is I think we all saw this coming, that they were going to struggle here in Azir. I'm a little surprised it didn't come sooner. So this is, I think, finally the moment where they're getting overwhelmed. And we always thought this was going to be the case. I think Adolin knew this was going to be the case. He took the tough assignment of the places that they were going to. So not unexpected, but not any less scary to face.
Do you think he's going to lose the city and retake it like he keeps bringing up? Or do you think he's going to hold it? Or do you think he's going to lose it entirely?
I think he's going to lose it entirely.
Okay.
At the end of where we leave off here, it definitely seems that way. They're getting attacked basically from people underneath them. And there's not much, you know, if you will, if to say it in a word, I'd say like a broken formation. And
in one word? Just,
yeah. It's really, really dire where I don't know. I mean, we are expecting some kind of, you know, on the third day, look to the east or whatever, some kind of like, you know, saving grace, get out of jail free card maybe from Maya. And
the fifth day.
Yeah, okay, I'm sorry.
You should be. You know what I mean.
Yeah, you know what I mean. Anyways, we're expecting something. So for that to happen, it would only really be impactful if they're on the final straw. So I do think Adolin is absolutely losing right now, but I think he's going to get bailed out. Either that, or you have a really, 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 really tragic scene where Adolin dies, and then Maya gets back with reinforcements, and then she's just sad. And I will also be sad. I don't think that's going to happen.
And mournfully check off your bingo board.
Yes, I will be very, very sad, and will sadly cry as I mark off another bingo.
As you slot. Celebrate your bingo.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I think if I'm going to get a bingo, I kind of need that one. I either need that or I need Adolin to become a Knight Radiant at some point. So something's going to give with Adolin here. So we'll see.
All right. And over to our star of the show, Sigzil and Layton are having a chat back and forth on span read. Layton says, "Hey, I found Moash." Sigzil jumps over and Layton dies. Is Moash's eyes glowing purple, or did I make that up in my head? Is he like all dressed in all black and then it's like void light purple in his eyes?
It talks about them being crystalline.
Yeah, but I feel like he's infused with void light, though, so his eyes are glowing like violet.
Oh, he can't be, right? He's wielding an honor blade.
Oh, that's true. So is he wielding stormlight then?
Yeah, I think he has to be. I think he has to be.
So it's not quite as cool in my mental picture then, because if he's dressed all in black and glowing a stormlight, that's not quite as cool.
Yeah, he does have some style points here, I guess, with the dress and everything, but he's no Zeth with like a stuttered after image following him. Yeah, he doesn't have like the extra like crazy
flare.
Unattainable. Yeah, flair. He doesn't have that, but he is going hard here, and yeah, I'm. This was brutal. This was hard. What was so tough was that going in to save, like to try to save anybody, like from Sigzil's perspective, is running into the inability to use your surges and powers.
Yeah. Yep.
That's what was tough. And for those with a live spren connection, they couldn't use shard blades, right? Like it was completely like cut off. Like that is really tough. I thought about this for a while of like Moash is like the killing machine under these circumstances until he runs into like Zeth, who has like 6-7 honor blades or something right now. He's absolutely unmatched anyone he walks up to right now. And unfortunately, that's not very good for our heroes. Layton dies a very sad death. And we get a very interesting death rattle as well. But you know, my other word for this episode was ruthless, and that's just absolutely what's going on here. He's been given his sight somewhat with these spikes, and he is just here to cause despair and wreckage, doing his signature move of killing someone impactful and then doing the bridge force salute just to make everybody mad. You know, I'm assuming that everyone who went to Dragonsteel, who is being like, "Ooh, Moash did nothing wrong," I'm assuming it's all antagonistic and trying to rage bait people. And I'm like, as I read this, I'm like, even more so, like, there was a lot of conversation before this book of, is there a redemption possibility for Moash? And I think no shot. I think this scene was really, if it wasn't already set in stone in your brain, this was my, like, there's no going back. There's no, oh, he's going to feel the weight of his emotion and he's going to want to turn or something like that. Like, this is fully gone, Moash.
That was the saving grace for me, if he had one, for Moash, is if he had an unmade, handcuffed to his arm, sucking out all of his emotion, he may well have been quite the victim here. However, he says in this chapter, I've got all my emotion back, and now I don't care. Like, I'm coming after you guys personally. You guys are the lapdogs of the Kolins. I'm here to kill you. And I'm like, all right, there you go. He has his emotion back, and he doesn't care.
I have to say, Moash's character and his villainy is quite shocking. Like, I understand that he was on the opposite side of Kaladin back in the earlier conflicts in, like, Words of Radiance and things, right? Where he wants to take down the king and Kaladin kind of switches the script on that. But, like, man, it's such a far fall. Like, even for someone who had so much bitterness, like, man, like, he's really dug his heels in to this and is, like, so far gone to where it's not just he wants revenge on these other people. He is just Odium's tool and is killing those that he were his friends, like, whenever he can. It's really a brutal villainy story, like, tenfold. Him and we had Taravangian in the last episode really double down as well of, like, nope, you thought I might have a glimmer of hope. I'm going to erase that right quick from the face of the earth, by the way. That's what's going on with Moash as well. There's no more, okay, but what if? It's just evil. I anticipate that Brandon is setting this up so that if we get some kind of fight or duel, as we get closer to day 10 in this moment of truth with this contest of champions, if something happens, you know, there's you're not going to have anybody reading the book be like, but Moash was actually misunderstood, you know. Like, I think we're past all that. I think we have true villains who are just heinous now.
And there's even more to it. He doesn't need to kill the Spren. He doesn't have a vendetta against Spren, and he seems to be going out of his way to include the Spren in his crusade or whatever you want to call this. In this scene, he uses his newfound ability with this sight to see Leighton's Spren and kills her, it, them, whoever it is.
He yells out a name before he dies.
Yeah.
And she dies.
Not
to bring it up on the somber note, but that's on someone's bingo board too. somebody dies for Anti-Light.
Well, on my board, I have more than two ice bren die from anti-light.
Okay.
So I think I need two more to check that. But progress. Progress.
Yeah, that's one.
And you got more than three previously named Windrunners die, and you're at two.
Correct.
Thanks, Layton.
Yeah, I'm sure Elliot was really, really sad as he's like, okay, add that to the list. My progress bar here. Trying to cross off these bingo slots. Yeah.
Talk about villains. You're going to paint me as a villain here.
Yeah.
I do want to cover the death rattle. And for anyone listening, the next probably duration of this episode only will have Sunlit spoilers in it. There's really no way to talk about this death rattle if you've read Sunlit without talking about Sunlit. So if you haven't read Sunlit, you can go ahead and close the episode here. If you have, Layton says, I see something, Sig. I see you. Storms, I am you. I die, a scholar with a spear. I die by the hands of a friend. My spren screams in death, and I know that I have failed. I am no captain. I am nothing. Fire strikes me, and my eyes burn. So this one doesn't come true, presumably.
I mean,
very interesting.
This is fascinating, right? Because we might have even said this at some point coming into the book. Coming into this book, when you ask the question of like, well, who might die in this book? There's a grand total of like two names that you can chalk up on. I'm 100% sure these people will not die.
Right.
Sigzil is one of them.
Yeah.
Because we've seen him in the future. We've spent a whole book with him in the future. So what?
And just as an aside, this is really, really interesting from an audience perspective. If you haven't read Sunlit, this goes crazy as a death rattle. You're like, oh man. If you have read Sunlit, then you're like, okay, we have a death rattle that we know doesn't come true. So you go in a completely other direction if you have read Sunlit, which I think is fascinating to me. Are there unreliable death rattles?
Okay, hold on though. You're discounting something. How?
I mean, Vienta's going to die. Yes. But he's going to live.
Are we 100% sure? I think the answer is yes. Are we 100% sure that Sigzil in Sunlit Man is not a cognitive shadow?
Yes. I mean, I think even if he is, it's still wrong because he's still alive. Cognitive shadows are still like active investiture for all intents and purposes. They're still living. That to die, you need to go into the beyond. Is that what they call it? The
great beyond or something to that effect.
I think you're right. Yeah.
Even if he is a cognitive shadow in Sunlit, which I don't think he is, I still think this is incorrect.
Yeah. So what is going on here?
I am wondering if we're setting up a really cool Vienta death. If Vienta sees it coming and sacrifices herself so that the prophecy doesn't come true, which I think would be really cool.
I think that very well could be. Yeah, since we get the luxury right now of talking Sunlit spoilers, that's exactly what I thought was going to happen here. Was I thought Vienta was going to die. I thought that was going to be like the thing that happens, because we know in Sunlit Man that Sigzil is with a different spren. So I'm like, okay. I guess a spoiler a little bit for us would be that, you know, okay, Sigzil has a different spren. Vienta's going to die right here. That hasn't happened yet. It still very well could happen. We talked about this a lot at that time we were reading something, man, of like, did the previous Spren leave? Did he swap Sprens for some? Like, he has a different Spren now, but we don't know 100% with 100% certainty that one died or something, right? Or unless he mentions it. It's been a minute since I've read Sunlit Man now, but yeah. With this, seeing Spren die like we just did, I'm assuming Vienta will die. And that will be the moving on point.
Yeah, I'm also making the assumption that Vienta will die. But a scholar with a spear, I die by the hands of a friend. My Spren screams in death, and I know that I have failed to lead. That all seems like it's possible, except for the I die. Well, what if that's not... Okay, I die by the hands of a friend. What if that's not the same event? What if he will die by the hands of a friend at some point in the future, and all of this is still true?
But it calls out Vire by name. I was ready to spin all kinds of theories. Yeah. I was ready to spin all kinds of theories on this, and then the final sentence is, Vire strikes me and my eyes burn.
Oh, like Vire strikes me. I heard fire in the audiobook. It's Vire.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, it specifically mentions Moash.
Okay. Interesting. So, yeah. So Vienta is going to sacrifice herself so that this doesn't come true.
I think that's possible, which then again brings us back to this death rattle must not come true fully.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. That's what I come to. But the...
Right?
I know that I have failed to lead is quite the gut punch, because Leighton in the previous chapter had just talked to Sigsel about how I shouldn't be a bridgeman, blah, blah, blah. Sigsel's like having this whole crisis of I shouldn't be in this conversation with the generals. And he just had the affirmation in the previous episode. I'm approaching the man I want to be. I am leading the way I want to lead. And then Leighton just threw this out as he died. I think the next chapter that we see Sigsel, he's going to be in a rough spot. Anything else?
This was a gut punch for sure. It makes me very scared to see what's next. Like, on both of these wars, we've kind of had this, okay, it's a big struggle, but we've had our head above water, at least. And it no longer feels that way for either front. So my prediction would be we'll see Jasnah show up over here and save the day, and then we'll see Maya's reinforcements show up on the other side and save the day. But as is right now, it looks really, really bad for both sides.
Yeah. Is there another battlefront that we need to lose before we save everybody? Shinovar, maybe? I mean, we're already kind of hosed with that one since Nail showed up. Alright. For next week, we will be in 83, 84, and 85. Thanks for joining me, Paul and Elliot.
On we go.
Toodles.